Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Staying Aligned podcast. You are seeing what I believe is the fourth episode of this season, and you are seeing the new format. Those who are used to the podcast have been listeners for a while, probably are used to that format on Zoom, where we bring guests in from around the world of PI to talk about their specialty and how that fits in with the chiropractors and what they're doing. This season, we're doing something a little different. If you recall the last couple of episodes, we're sort of going out into the field. We're going to chiropractors' offices, particularly those who are less than 10 years or so in practice, to talk about sort of the early days and stuff they wish they had known back when they were getting started. So without any further ado, today we are joined by Dr. Andrew Smith. Dr. Smith is kind of the whole package in terms of chiropractors. I continue to be in awe. I continue to be in awe of what you do here, both here physically in this office, but also showing up to continuing education, being a huge supporter of, I feel like, of me and of mm-hmm. our my firm. I mean, you're always there cheering me on mm-hmm. When we're doing continuing ed stuff, but also new mom mm-hmm. and like doing that and then working, coming back and, yeah. and back in practice and working with your father here. So Dr. Smith, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I gave you quite the introduction, but I do want you to sort of talk as if I don't know you.
Okay.
Yes. And tell me who the hell you are.
Who the hell am
I? Who the hell are you?
Thank you so much for having me. As Alex said, I am a new mom. I just had a baby 4.5 months ago. I've been in practice here in La Mirada for little over 10 years. I have a little different experience than a lot of people because I've been in practice with my dad the entire time. He's been in this community 39 years this year. So I grew up in chiropractic. I started working in the clinic when I was 16 years old, working the front desk, working the back. So I've been in every position in the clinic, and we've done personal injury the whole time. My background is athletics, so I like taking people that are hurt and making them better. As you do in sport, you do in personal injury.
Right.
So it's a really fun, it's a fun type of patient to work with because you take them from a place of, you know, fear, pain, suffering, whatever that may be. And most of the time you can get them back to living their normal full life. And it's very fulfilling, and I really enjoy it.
Thank you. And that's a really interesting parallel, because I don't think I've ever thought of it that way. But a lot of times in sports, certainly with competitive athletes, they get themselves injured and then are suffering a loss in their activities of daily living mm-hmm. vis-a-vis their sport. Mm-hmm. And it becomes the role of their provider, you, mm-hmm. to get them back doing that thing as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very similar to the role of a chiropractor in a PI case, where the injury maybe is less self-inflicted.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, their activities of daily living are just as affected. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking before we started today about how PI is both really lucrative, mm-hmm. and I think everybody kind of fundamentally knows that it's really lucrative, but I think a lot of people starting out might maybe don't know about how rewarding or fulfilling it is. Mm-hmm. Speak to that a little bit. I mean, I go on and on about this, about yeah. chiropractors and why I think that's such like a pure at heart profession mm-hmm. that are just trying to get people better. And that if that's really your motivation, that PI is a home for you, mm-hmm. but speak to your own experience on that.
I think kind of to what you said, it is, there's a really fulfilling part of that. You take someone who's unfortunately been injured in a motor vehicle accident, not their fault. They're in pain. Their life is affected. As a chiropractor, you're kind of uniquely positioned to really like quarterback that care, and you are the one that they're seeing all the time. So you're building the interpersonal relationships, you're building the strong rapport, you're creating the environment that's helping them with the healing, and then also getting them to the providers that if they need to seek outside care or get additional imaging, you're the one that gets to coordinate that. And I think I enjoy that like interdisciplinary communication. I enjoy working with the good attorneys that I can have a conversation with, and I can call and I can talk to them about the case, and they actually know what's going on with the case too, because sometimes that's not always the case.
Is it not?
Yeah. Your attorney's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Well, in some cases, but anyway, I like seeing them coming from a place of pain and then usually leaving in a successful position. And I like to think of myself as being the conduit for their healing in that space.
Yeah, you are the conduit to healing in that space. So the reason why we've changed the format of the podcast mm-hmm. this season, and again, this is something we talked about a minute ago, is because I've heard so many times from young-ish chiropractors, mm-hmm. I did 10 PI cases right out of chiropractic college. I got screwed 10 different ways. Yeah. And by the end, I was just like, you know what? Not for me. Mm-hmm. I'll leave PI to somebody else. And I heard this story over and over again. And I was like getting really disheartened. I go, well, why would a chiropractor not want to take on PI? A, it's super lucrative. And B, it's super rewarding and sort of totally goes to the niche of why most chiropractors went into chiropractic in the first place mm-hmm. is to like help heal people with their hands in a non-narcotic, non-steroidal, non-surgical mm-hmm. way, which is PI in a nutshell for like mm-hmm. most cases.
Right.
Why they would then swear off of PI like, like a bad date kind of situation. And I get it. I mean, you've heard that too, yeah. right? You're like, yeah, I dated totally. 10 dudes. They were all crap. I'm done with, yeah. like, it's like the same concept. It's like, well, okay, but maybe you just didn't find the one yet. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the same concept with PI, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is there are good practitioners out there, both chiropractors and PI attorneys mm-hmm. and medical doctors. And it's yeah. like finding the right team mm-hmm. that then makes your experience really, really positive, mm-hmm. both lucratively and also like just holistically mm-hmm. Moving forward. So I want you to speak to that. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that people listening are young doctors mm-hmm. who are considering PI or are hopeful about PI, but don't want to step on the landmines that those that came before them may have stepped on. Mm-hmm. And so the hope is that maybe this will serve as a way of people sidestepping that. So what immediately comes to mind when I say early days, landmines, PI?
So I have a slightly different experience because I did have my dad as someone who had some other instances where those landmines that we talk about, but that doesn't mean I didn't have any of my own. We have had very, very rarely do we have a case that doesn't turn out, or we have difficulty with the attorney. And I think part of that is you have to be confident enough to have a conversation with them, not afraid to like stand your ground. And then know if something feels funny off the bat, it's probably going to be funny. And using those, like that intuition, those, how would you describe it? Like your spidey senses. I can't think of the other word. I'm in kid mode a little bit.
Yeah. And your mom senses are this similar concept.
Yeah. Where it's like, this is a little.
Let's go into that though. Let's deep dive into that. Like, so what kinds of things have set off the spidey senses?
I had one case that I was in practice maybe like 2 years or so. And it was an attorney that we didn't know. And it was a young woman. Young woman was pleasant. It was a very straightforward, like a rear end collision, clear liability, nothing complex jumping out from the case perspective. And she did a normal course of care. The bill was reasonable. We had the reports, the soap notes, the bills, everything sent over to the attorney. And maybe it was like a year had gone by, reached out, didn't get a response. Another month went by, reached out, didn't get a response. And we were like, this feels wrong. So we ended up contacting the patient, and the patients are your friends. The patients, you build the rapport with them as the doctor. And so usually you can call them up and have a conversation. And that patient had said that they had received payment however many months prior. And we let her know that the attorney didn't pay any of her.
You hadn't received payment.
Yeah, we had not received payment with a signed lien, signed by the attorney and dated, and with the patient as well. And so when we went to the attorney saying, like, what happened, they were dishonest, and they ended up making the patient, like, pay for their bill, which is not good.
But this is exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This is a way that most people wouldn't even think mm-hmm. that they could be screwed. Like you wouldn't even conceive of like you did everything right in this case. You got the lien signed, but that's the number one thing that a lot
lien
of times they don't do
is
get the lien signed by the attorney. Uh-huh. You did that.
Yeah.
You had the signed lien. Mm-hmm. You did good care, good treatment, got the notes in, everything in on time, billing record, everything was billed reasonable. And then radio silence, which happens, by the way, in the negotiation. Sometimes if a case goes into litigation, there's a period of a lull. Mm-hmm. And in our office, we get a call from a chiropractor's office every so often going, hey, update on whatever case. And we go, oh, that one's in lit, or oh, that one's wherever.
Yeah.
Totally normal. Right. But when you go radio silence and then the attorney goes radio silence and then you have to reach out to the client and go, what the heck happened? Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, I don't understand what you're talking about. I got my money months ago. I thought this was all closed.
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. This is exactly what I'm talking about. And so, and how to sidestep those sorts of issues. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, my attorney brain is like, okay, well, what could you have done in that situation? One thing is to send a bill to the clients at the end of care. Mm-hmm. We like it when they send a bill every so often, quarterly or something, just to let the patient know how
like,
much.
Hey, you still have it.
You still owe this money.
Yeah.
You still owe this money. Every quarter. And they can see the amount going up and up and up. One of the reasons that's awesome, by the way, is that sometimes at the end of the case, they feign, how could it be $4,500? They have
whatever.
I can't wait. And the reason is because they had no idea what their bill has been all along. They've just been going along three times a week for 6 months and are like, how could that cost this much money? It's like, what do you mean, how could it cost this much money?
Yeah.
So helping them, you know, receive the bill as it's going up is good for that purpose. But also, as you continue to send this bill after they stop care, they realize it hasn't been paid.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do the same thing with the attorney's office. You can let them know and, you know, have a diary for 3 months, 6 months, like, hey, we're still here. What's going on with this case? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's pending. That's fine. No worries.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that we advise often is send the client the bill and also like touch base with the PI attorney. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're working with a conscientious PI attorney, you'll hear from them every so often letting you know what the heck is going on. Mm-hmm. But you can also reach out. People get busy. I like understand.
Yeah.
But and then at the end, you know, when you found out that what had happened here, you have rights there. I mean, you certainly could reach out to the PI attorney and go, pay me, or I'll take you to small claims court because I have a lien signed by you saying you'll pay me when the case resolves, and you didn't, right? I mean, I think a lot of chiropractors don't realize the power that is in that lien. Mm-hmm. Right? An attorney that signs a lien is signing a contract.
Right.
If they breach that contract, there's not a lot they can say to get out of it. I mean, I've helped a lot of chiropractors go through small claims court against shady PI attorneys, and they almost always win because if you have a signed lien, that's the contract.
Yeah.
If you have your soap notes and your medical records, that's proof that you substantially complied with the terms of the contract, so you did what you were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. The billing records show the damages, the amount that the breach of the contract damaged you. Mm-hmm. You submit all of that to a small claims court, you just let the attorney tire themselves out with all the reasons they don't think they should have had to pay. It's unreasonable, and these charges aren't right, and this treatment is unnecessary. And they stop talking. Eventually, the judge goes, counsel, I'm looking at this lien. I'm looking at this contract. Doesn't say anything about any of that. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say unless it's reasonable or unless it's this or unless it. It just says at the end of the case, you signed that you would pay them if they did the work. They did the work. I see the records here. I see the bills. Why didn't you pay them? Mm-hmm. And they just get a judgment against them for the amount of the medical bills. It's like magic. It's like legal magic.
Magic.
It is. It's like magic. But, you know, you do one of those and then you all of a sudden you like stand up a little taller the next time some PI attorney's trying to tell you like, oh, yeah, I paid out that case. You can go after the client if you want. It's like, nope. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go after you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very rare. I mean, I think I've had it happen maybe two or three times. I think in the many, many PI cases I've done. So it's a very rare occurrence.
Yeah.
But it is why you want to work with attorneys that you know or that you can actually get on the phone with, that you don't get your spidey senses, you know, going off about.
Right.
And I think communication is also the big thing, too. If they're not willing to communicate with you, then they're probably not going to communicate with you when the case settles. So you want to make sure you're keeping that dialogue open. And whether it's you as the chiropractor or someone in your team that's designated to be in that role, that I think is where you can get the most success from them.
I I mean, you're talking about our skunk test without talking about our skunk test, right?
Yeah.
About like, will they sign your lien? Will they return your phone calls? Mm-hmm. Will they send you all the insurance information, photographs, paperwork? The only thing you didn't mention, which I think is worth mentioning, is if you can get the attorney on the phone, mm-hmm. you might ask them, who's your chiropractor?
Mm-hmm.
And I like this because it's a little tongue in cheek, right?
Yeah.
But also a attorney who's older than 30,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't have one,
mm-hmm.
maybe they don't believe in it. And if you don't believe in the therapy that you're either sending your patient, your clients to, mm-hmm. or allowing them to rack up bills at,
mm-hmm.
how likely are you to prioritize paying those bills?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
If
you're not buying it, right? If you're not like into acupuncture, let's say, you don't believe it does anything,
mm-hmm.
and then your client racks up a big acupuncture bill, well, how incentivized are you going to be to make sure that acupuncturist gets paid? It's like probably a lot less so,
mm-hmm.
than somebody who believes in it and thinks it's legitimate. So it's another little tell, is that question.
The other, it actually popped into my head while you were talking too. I had another case, I forget how many years ago, but the attorney, the patient is already a patient in the practice, and they had a injury of some sort, and the attorney was like very apprehensive about the chiropractor, even though the patient was like, no, I want to go there for my care. I've already been here.
Yeah.
I want to go to these people. I trust them. And the attorney was like, no. And so that patient ended up just paying out of pocket for their chiropractic piece of the case,
mm-hmm.
and then just use that as the back end thing. We were like, we're not going to do it on a lien if
the attorney won't sign the lien.
Yeah, if they're not going to play ball in the respective legal ball court.
Did you ever find out why this attorney was so apprehensive?
No, I don't
because
know.
There's a couple of reasons I can think of, and
uh-huh.
one of them is if they have their own arrangements with chiropractors'
uh-huh.
offices, then sometimes they're really apprehensive about letting their clients treat with anybody that they don't
mm-hmm.
have a pre-arranged arrangement with,
mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, is illegal. That's fraud, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have an understanding that
wink, wink, nudge, nudge,
that if they treat with you and rack up a $5,000 bill, that attorney then gets to use to justify an increased settlement offer, but then they know automatic 50% reduction on every single case, and that's an understanding that we have. Well, that's billing fraud,
mm-hmm.
right? To bill an amount of money you don't actually expect to get paid.
Yeah.
So that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then also it could be what I was saying, which is that they just don't believe in it.
Right.
And they just don't want
I think
their...
that was more the in this particular case, and which is unfortunate because, you know, now this patient has to go through different means and get different things, not that different than what they would, how they would want to be taken care of.
So I'm impressed that in that case you managed to thread the needle between you still staying on as the chiropractor and the attorney still staying on as the attorney. Usually somebody gives.
Yeah,
in
and
that.
It was it's a unique situation. So it was we're just, this is what we're gonna do, and you know, if they wanted to continue with this attorney, then that's their prerogative. But
have you ever had somebody come to you and ask you, like, complain about their attorney and be like, you know, probably insert billboard attorney here, but have you ever had that situation where they come in and they're like, they won't answer the phone, or they're not doing anything?
Yeah, very rarely does that happen, because again, I try to really just work with attorneys that I have a good rapport with, and
but sometimes they come in already having somebody, and
you
have to decide if I'm either going to just tell them, no, I'm not working with you and that attorney, or not.
Yeah, I do. I've had that come up usually with the billboardy ones. Not all of them, but like some of the billboardy ones. The patient's like, oh, they won't call me back. They won't answer my text.
Yeah.
Or they just keep kind of like, the case manager kind of like blows them off type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, well, you know, we try and reach out to them as well, and we may have a different email thread, and you know, just try to get some touches on there. But it does happen, because also and I find that weird, because like, as the attorney, you work for them, and it's contingent on the settlement, and I work for the patient, right? Like that's our relationship.
When it's so all working correctly,
it's great.
Our motives should be aligned.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing when it does. But then you have these instances and you're like, okay, well, I'm, and you're, as a chiropractor, doing your best to kind of like
be professional, but also like, I don't know why they won't call you back.
Yeah.
Like I,
right.
I'm not sure.
Well, and I'm sure you're getting, especially if you had anything to do with which attorney they went to.
It's usually not someone that I've sent to.
Oh, right. Yeah. I imagine not.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
there's that feeling you get of like, now my reputation's on the line here.
Yeah.
Right. And it happens in reverse all the time. We help some client. They the chiropractor will refer them to pain management. So we go, okay, great. Mm-hmm. Do you have anyone you know and would like to send them to? No, we don't. Mm-hmm. Who do you know that's pro chiropractic? Well, we've got a list. So, mm-hmm. okay, we'll pick somebody on our list that's, you know, that other people have had good experiences with. But then if some client has a bad experience with them, they usually come back to me and they're like, I had to wait for 2 hours in their office. And I'm like, I don't work for them. They don't work for me. Like, I can't call and reprimand them. All I can do is say, I'm really sorry.
Yeah,
you know, next time I'll downstat that person. They won't get a referral from me. But like, you know what I mean? It creates a weird situation.
It is because when you're doing PI and you're putting your reputation on the line, like you said, like it's, you know, where you're referring to the different providers or different specialists. So when the patient has a negative experience, you're like, I can't control a lot of these things. I know they're really good at what they do, but it's that like management expectation is always
do you ever say, and no is a valid answer, but do you ever say like, well, if you've had enough bad experiences with this person, like you're free to change attorney, like you're not locked in, you can you can switch?
I have had that conversation again, rarely, maybe a handful of times, and usually if I can, especially with someone I've like referred them to, then I usually get on the phone with the attorney and I'm like, hey.
You know, if you made the referral.
Yeah, I made the referral. And I'll be like,
but
what's
this up? This happens, I imagine, more when it's somebody they walked in with. You don't know this person.
They don't know.
Never heard
They're
of
like,
this person.
We saw this billboard or we saw this, you know, what is it? The bench.
Bus bench. It still blows my mind. It still blows my mind that people are like, well, I don't know of any good PI attorneys. I guess I'll take this bus bench's word for it. Like, imagine if you like, we're like, oh, I have a cardiac issue. Like, I have a heart murmur.
Yeah.
I need to go see a cardiologist. Do you know of any? No, I don't know of any. But I saw a billboard for what? Like, nobody would hire a cardiologist that way. So much so that they don't even advertise on billboards.
Maybe you don't pick your chiropractor from TikTok?
I don't pick lots of things from lots of places, but it's just, it blows my mind that like billboard, clearly it works.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've ever driven on a freeway in California, but it's like every other billboard now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Total tangent. No, I was asking about, because it's delicate. I don't know if you've ever done it, but it's delicate when somebody comes in with an attorney and, you know, somebody you maybe have never worked with. So you're like, all right, we'll give it a shot. We try. And then it's very obvious that, like, it's not a good situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to get yourself in trouble with the attorney by, you know, being heavy-handed about them switching.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I mean, the client has a right to switch and have the attorney that they want. And you know from your much greater experience than the client has that they are entitled to a call back and they're entitled to a responsive email. And they shouldn't have to wait months to, you know, go to see a specialist or whatever because some attorney's office is just completely ignoring them. So you're like, well, I want to tell them they don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you had this experience? And like, how do you navigate it?
Yeah, I mean, you're... Again, I'm trying to think, maybe like a handful, you know, in my career. It is like you're right. It's a delicate situation because you're not trying to, you don't want to like tell them what to do necessarily, but you want to give them like the option, like, hey, you can do this.
Yeah.
And same way, if it was like I know we're talking about like the patient and the attorney relationship too, but also you could have it with like, you know, the specialist, right? Like you don't have to go to like that one.
Yeah.
Right. If it's not a good
fit. But I get to be a lot more heavy handed about it. Like if they call me and they go, I had to wait 2 hours in that person's waiting room, then I go, screw them.
Yeah.
I'll set you up with a different person tomorrow. Like,
and
I don't run any risk of like that doctor's office suing me for, you know, interfering with contractual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tell a patient to fire their attorney and they do, you know, you there's a delicate legal situation there. You are allowed, by the way, to tell your patients. You are allowed to tell your patients that, you know, if your attorney's not returning their phone calls, that they have a right to have that, and that they, A, are allowed to switch attorneys in the middle of the case, B, that it won't cost them any money. A lot of times they don't realize that. They think they'll owe the last guy money. Mm-hmm. Doesn't work that way. In real life, the new attorney that takes over from the old attorney has to pay that old attorney out of whatever money they recover that would be their attorney's fee. Mm-hmm. But the client's portion is sacrosanct. It doesn't change, no matter how many attorneys you get. Although if you end up with more than a couple, then people start
having some questions. Yeah.
Have you ever had that situation? You have like the attorney shopping client patient?
No, I had actually one that was the reversal. It was that they were with an attorney that they had used before. And then they were like, nah, I'm going to go with a different one, and then pick like a billboard one. And it was like, I'm not sure if that was the move. I mean, you're entitled to do whatever you want, but like, you know, I don't know if that was the move. So,
So in our last 5 minutes, I want you to sort of just last thoughts, but what sorts of things do you wish you'd known? I mean, coming into PI, granted you had your dad as kind of a backstop for, hey, what's happening here?
Or like, this was weird or something.
Yeah. This seemed weird. Is it weird? Mm-hmm. Oh no, that's normal. Or yeah, that's definitely weird. Mm-hmm. But like, is there anything you wish you'd known coming into PI that like you could go back and tell younger you or young doctors that are listening to this that are like, yeah, that's a great tip. That's something that I'll definitely try to keep an eye out for.
The skunk test that Steele and Eisner have is a really good one.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I do go to a lot
for saying that.
I do go to a lot of their continuing education. I'm a big fan of Alex. I think he does great work, and he's a advocate of the profession, and I always enjoy and respect his perspective.
That's very kind of you. And I'm going to parlay that into something that's not quite so about me, which is continuing ed is great. That's the tip I'm taking from that.
Yeah.
Is continuing education, which is obviously you're obligated to do, but there's continuing ed and then there's continuing ed.
Yeah.
And you can certainly go to PI themed continuing education. There's PI for all. There's all kinds of various PI seminars.
Yeah.
Obviously my office puts on a number of them throughout the year.
I've been to Steele and Eisner's several times and it's always very good.
Again, this is not the point of the podcast, but I appreciate the plug.
But I do. Yeah. It's true though.
Thank you very much. Is there anything else though? Obviously continuing education is a must, and focusing on PI, strengthening that as because laws change and things change. So, but what else? What else?
Continuing education is a great place to start, like learning and getting more comfortable. Making sure that you have the documents that you need, because there is a little bit more documentation with PI. It's a little bit different than just regular case management. Understanding like the car accident, the mechanism of the car accident. You're not recreating or anything like that, but just understanding the forces a little bit better and being able to conceptualize that a little bit more to then identify and treat the patient better.
And where do you get that?
We use an intake form that basically is like check marks. So it's easy for the patient to do. Just where were you sitting? What position was your head in? Were you turned? Do you have your shoulder and lap belt on? Were you in the car?
So you have a PI intake, special PI intake.
Yes, special PI intake auto accident questionnaire that we go through. What areas hurt immediately? What areas start to hurt later? Past medical history, but we have that on our regular intake. But there's a more specific one that we use specifically with PI so that it helps kind of like, one, it gives the patient another space to like tell their story, because that is like there is a narrative associated with it, because I can't tell you how many times they're like, I was turning to my right and I was saying X, Y, and Z. And that's like part of their total, you know, that's their story. That's part of their case. And so it's important that the patient can document that for themselves, and also good for me to know so that I can make sure that I'm treating these areas appropriately and that like the mechanism makes sense for what they're complaining of.
Right.
The other thing is, and some of this is a little bit of an experience component. When you come out of school, you have a lot of knowledge. And sometimes when you're in certain instances, and this could be in PI and in practice too, that you may, you know, maybe doubt yourself a little bit, or you're like, I don't know, maybe you're intimidated. The attorney's like very flashy and they like, oh, I don't know. Yes.
since you're really nice to me. But you have the knowledge to do this and be confident with your diagnosis, be confident with your treatment plan. And as long as you're keeping the patient's best interest, and sometimes that's seeing you for the entirety of their case, and sometimes that's referring out, but having the confidence to know when to do those things so that the patient gets the best result is always going to be the best way to approach it. I really enjoy doing personal injury. I've done it for about a decade now. And I will say, for all the athletes that I work on, which I love working with my athletes, I have marathon runners and different types of extreme athletes, which is so fun to work on. But PI is accessible to everyone because there are many more car accidents than there are elite athletes. And it's something that you are going to see every day. And being confident in your skills, getting the education, and always kind of fine-tuning that your clinical mind will demonstrate itself in the case when it comes to settle. And then you'll have great PI friends and be able to do great work.
That was awesome. I loved the piece about confidence because I think a lot, I was at a chiropractor's office last month and he was like, oh, I've only been out of school a year. Mm-hmm. I haven't done any PI yet. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, why not? Why haven't you done any PI? And he was like, well, I had a couple that, you know, came in, there were existing patients mm-hmm. that came in after they'd been in accidents, but I told him I didn't have all the things. Like I wasn't ready.
You don't need a lot of things.
Well, that's what I said, well, what things, I'm sitting in an office. So I was like, what things don't you have? I'm looking at a table, a computer. I mean, what mm-hmm. else do you not have? He didn't have like medical record software, or he didn't have some, I don't know, silver box with a wand coming out of it. I don't pretend to know what all the stuff does, but I was like, you don't need, like, yeah. you just need to start doing it yeah. and like building that confidence mm-hmm. because it will come mm-hmm. and you'll realize that your hands, you know, a table, a computer, really all that you need mm-hmm. to start doing this thing and building your confidence and mm-hmm. realizing that you can do this, that you're qualified to do this. Like you said, you come out of school with a lot of knowledge, mm-hmm. but not yet a lot of wisdom. Mm-hmm. Attorneys are the exact same way. I come out with a ton of knowledge yeah. and no application, right? Like no, totally, yeah. I don't know how to apply this knowledge yet. Yes. And that comes with time. That yeah. comes with experience. But mm-hmm. you have to just like start doing it.
Yeah.
But I think listening to things like this and going to continuing ed and just giving yourself a pep talk in the mirror before you have your first PI case that mm-hmm. like, I am qualified to do this. Mm-hmm. I have a degree that allows me to do this yeah. and I'm going to be okay at it. And I'm going to make mistakes, but it'll be okay because I'm the quarterback of the care, mm-hmm. not the only person providing care. Mm-hmm. I think is another thing that a lot of times chiropractors, particularly new ones, they start getting, you know, protective over their mm-hmm. over their patients. Like, you're the quarterback. You're not the only provider. Like, mm-hmm. you have a scope of practice which is large.
Right.
But there are definitely moments for mm-hmm. imaging and
totally.
Second opinions mm-hmm. and unfortunately sometimes outside care by medical specialists who deal in drugs and surgeries
injections,
and things,
yeah.
injections, that those things happen and are necessary sometimes.
Yeah.
But that confidence piece, I mean, that's mm-hmm. a huge thing for people starting out that they don't have it yet. Mm-hmm. And they worry that it won't, you know, they can't get started until they have it. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it goes the other way around. You have yeah. to start it.
It's a muscle you have to flex, right?
That's right.
Yeah. You have to keep working it out and it'll get stronger.
Well, doctor, thank you so much
thank you.
For doing this. In your office here, I'm very happy to have somebody willing to come on and talk about their early experience, but also have you as a friend
yeah.
To come and cheer me on at all of our continuing ed stuff, which I invite everybody who's listening to also come and be a cheerleader and also learn a ton about mm-hmm. PI. Sean, we'll trot Sean out and have him speak to his, almost 50 years of experience, mm-hmm. which dwarfs my experience by a considerable margin. But we have a good time at these things. So
yeah, and it's a great way to, yes, get your continuing education because we have to maintain our licenses, but also get a lot of just applicable knowledge that you can take and use Monday.
That's right.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here.